played to say Theos. I'm like, it's not. All right, so I've got folks still grabbing a bite, but I'm going to kick us off here just because our agenda is a little longer than normal on this budget and personnel committee meeting of MBARD. And so with that, I'm going to officially call us to order here at 12:33. With that, I'm going to turn to Siri and ask for a roll call, please.
All right. Would you like to do roll call first? Okay.
Roll call, no.
Okay. Yeah. Chair Lopez.
Present.
Chair Carbone. I mean, excuse me, Committee Member Carbone. Director Labar. Director Adams. Director Adams?
Present.
Thank you. Director Kosmicki?
Here.
Can you hear us?
Director yes, Labar? I can. Can you hear me? Yes, can you?
I can hear you.
You can't hear me?
All right, I can see his lips moving.
Can you hear us now?
Yes, can you hear me?
Okay, hold on. Technical difficulties.
While we go through the technical difficulties and address those, I want to address that Supervisor Colin Kosmicki will not attend today's meeting in person. He is experiencing flu-like symptoms, and so he'll participate remotely in accordance with AB 2449 using the just cause provision under item 3. Legal counsel can outline the procedures if requested at the beginning of the meeting. So at this point, we just want to be clear that he's stating that he is participating using the just cause provision. And if there's any, we need to ask him if there's any and if there is, that we ask that he disclose the nature of the relationship. And other than that, there's no need for us to vote on this. So now he's rejoined us. So we have audio.
Okay. It shows that his audio is working, but now I don't see him.
Can we ask Mitesh? I see Mitesh Desai. Do you mind unmuting yourself and just saying a few words so we can see if the audio end is on our end or on Colin's?
Oh. Super Kosmicki, he should be there, but he just turned off his video screen. Oh, he signed on again.
Different device.
Okay.
All right, Colin, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we still can't hear you.
Okay, this is when I noticed technically when Supervisor Kosmicki speaks.
Let's see, Mitesh has unmuted themselves. Mitesh, can you try saying a few words for us and see if the audio end is on our side?
Sure, can you hear me?
Now Mitesh is speaking because we got a green box, but we can't hear you. Thank you, Mitesh. So we know the audio is an output issue. On
can you hear me now?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, I'm playing around with the settings as much as I can.
It could be us.
All righty.
All right. So with that, so the reason, can you confirm that the reason you're joining us virtually today is due to just cause?
Yes, illness, flu-like symptoms.
Perfect. And then we'll ask, is there anybody in the room that is 18 or over with you today?
No, there's not.
All right. Then with that, we don't need to take any vote. And we'll proceed with the proper declarations having been made and on the record. And we'll jump into our public comment period. This is an opportunity for the public to share comments regarding items not on today's agenda within the purview of this body. We invite those participating via Zoom to use the raise hand function or star 9 via landline. Is there anybody in or online that wishes to make comment at this time?
No one online.
Seeing no one online and nobody coming forward in room, we'll close our public comment and proceed with our consent agenda, which is one item, item 4. Is there a member of this body who wishes to pull the item from today's consent agenda? Seeing and hearing none, we'll go to the public, see if there's a member of the public who wishes to comment on consent.
No one online.
All right, hearing and seeing nobody, I'll bring it back for action. Is there a motion to approve our consent agenda? We've got a motion from Adams, a second from Carbone, and with that, I'll ask Siri for a roll call vote.
All right, Director Carbone.
Yes.
Chair Lopez.
Yes.
Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Yes.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Director Adams. Aye. Approves unanimously.
Good afternoon, members of the board. This is our quarterly review of our county treasurer's report on investments. MBAR deposits all of our cash receipts with the Monterey County, and they in turn invest our money for us. Attached to the county's treasurer's report for the quarter ended September 30th, 2024. This shows our overall year yield of investments was 4.25%, which was higher than the previous quarter with a 4.13, and it's higher than the same quarter of 2023, which was 3.1%. The economic and market conditions that support this investment activity and performance are outlined in the attached documents. MBARDA has not received its quarterly investment earnings for the first quarter of 2024, but our annual budget is at $487,200, and the attachments are back. Questions on that?
Any questions for members of this committee? Seeing none in room, and negative from Supervisor Kosmicki, we'll go to public comments. See if there's any members of the public with comments on this particular item. Item 5 on today's agenda. Seeing no one online, nobody coming forward in room, I'll turn and see if there is a motion to receive the report.
So move, Carbone, to receive this report.
Second, Adams.
From Carbone, second from Adams. And we'll turn Siri once again for a roll call vote.
Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Yes.
Chair Lopez.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Approved unanimously.
Motion carries, and we'll stick with Rosa as we go on to item 6 and turn over the floor for an update on our OPEB trust accounts.
Okay, so this is our quarterly report for the same quarter ended September 30th. MBARD has a trust fund established with PARS. We've had that since 2018. PARS has become PFM Asset Management. They consolidated, but it's still owned by PARS. Our OPEB and Pension Trust Investment Guidelines call for a quarterly review of the trust account activity. So attached are the two reports. Currently, our OPEB is in the investment strategy balance. Account balance is $1,542,390. And through the quarter ended September 30th, we've had a total investment income of $600,390. It shows our investment return percentages at 1 month, 1.43, 5.59 at 3 months. For the 1 year return was at 23.52%, and for a 3 year return average of 4.87%. For our pension trust, our investment strategy is moderately conservative. And our total account balance is $834,472. Through the quarter ended September 30th, we've had a total investment income of $109,472. Our investment return percentages at 1 month was 1.39, 3 months, 5.44, 1 year return of 18.03, and a 3 year average of 2.37. The reports are attached for your review. And
comments? Being none on the dais?
No.
Kosmicki?
No, thank you.
All right. We'll go out to the public, see if there's any public input on item 6.
Online.
No room. We'll close public comment on item 6 and look for a motion. We'll wait. Chipotle is doing its work.
I'll second.
All right, I've got a second from Adam. Motion from Adam, second from Carbone.
All right. Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Aye.
Chair Lopez.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Passed unanimously.
All right, motion carries. And don't mess with good things, so we're going to stick with Rosa for item 7.
Okay. All right, so this last one, this is to receive the draft financial statement and independent audit report for the year ended June 2024. Prepared by Bedolia and Associates, and it is recommended to accept it by the Board of Directors. So annually, Embark does our independent audit. This year was completed by Bedolia and Associates. And at today's meeting, Mitesh Desai will be doing a presentation on our financials. So we do our audit in accordance with the generally accepted auditing standards and in accordance with audit and reporting guidelines as required by the State Controller's Office. No significant deficiencies or material witnesses were identified during the course of the audit, which took place in September. As noted in the MD&A, the Manager's Discussion Analysis section, we have a net position increased by $2.86 million from the prior year. Operating grant revenues increased by about $1.2 million, and that's due to spending out of grant money that we collected in advance. And then our investment income also increased by about $202,000. That was due to the higher interest rates. Surcharge payments from the DMV were less than 1% over the previous year. Our expenses totaled about $11.2 million, which that was an increase of about $3.5 million from the prior year. And a big portion of that is attributable to the grant payments of projects that were completed by the planning division. The notable expenses had to do with salaries and pensions. We had a total combined fund balance of about $25.6 million, which was an increase of $3.3 million. And our general fund had a surplus of $860,000. I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to Mitesh. He's going to do a presentation on the financial. Mitesh, decide he's on the.
Thanks. Let me share my screen quick. Thank you for allowing me to join remotely this year. And hopefully you can see my presentation on the screen. And hopefully you don't hear a lot of background noise. I mean, currently there's some neighbors are doing something.
We see your presentation and your audio is clear.
One second. Sorry, is that better?
Yeah, you're good. Thank you. Again, your audio is clear, Mitesh. You're good to go.
There's some, I guess, so I'm doing using the leaf blower right outside my doors. Anyway, I'll go ahead then. Going over the agenda for the meeting of the presentation. So I'll go over the deliverables, the scope of the audit, the areas of primary audit risk, the auditor's report and financial statements, the required communications, new accounting standards that will be implemented this year. And I'll be happy to answer any questions and conclude on it. In terms of the deliverables and the scope of the audit, so we've issued our report on the basic financial statements of the district. With that, we'll also be issuing a letter to the board that will pretty much have a lot of the items that I'll be going over in part of the required communication section of the presentation. And then also in January, we'll be submitting the district's state controller's report, which is essentially the financial statements in an electronic format. In terms of areas of primary audit risk, the audit is performed on a risk-based approach. So as part of that, we are required to identify risks and plan our audit to address those risks, in addition to covering the various elements of the financial statements. The first risk that we found was significant is the risk of management override of internal controls. This is the risk that management may not follow their own policies and procedures, such as approving time cards, approving invoices, preparing bank reconciliations, and so forth. This is a risk that's inherent in all audits. So it's something that not necessarily specific to the district itself. And here's a listing of various procedures that we've applied in our audit. This includes assigning more complex sections to more experienced staff, incorporating a little bit of unpredictability as part of the audit, looking at manual journal entries in the accounting records. Manual journal entries kind of override the numbers that are recorded in all the accounts through their various standard processes. So essentially just adjusting one number directly. So for those are usually have a much higher risk. So we look at journal entries, make sure they're supported and adequately approved. If we do identify any unusual transactions in the accounting records, we'd pay closer attention to those records. The reason I didn't identify any of those unusual types of business transactions this year. And of course, we'll perform our fraud and related party transactions. Another significant area of the audit is revenues and receivables. With that comes improper revenue recognition, which is that revenues may be manually adjusted to make them seem higher or in some cases lower. For some reason, we apply procedures such as looking at transactions that are material, which are primarily your license permit fees, your DMV surcharges, and then also grant revenues are something that we pay close attention to. In terms of auditors' reports, so our audit is conducted in accordance with auditing standards that are generally accepted in the United States. So these are procedures that are set by the AICPA, which are rules that govern what procedures we're supposed to perform. And in terms of the opinion we've issued an unmodified opinion. What that means is that the financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects. Significant accounting policies have been consistently applied. The estimates in the financial statements are reasonable, and the disclosures that accompany those financial statements, we believe, are complete and accurate. Moving on to the financial statements, this is a slide just covering for the past 3 years the district's assets. And you'll notice here that there was a significant increase in cash investments. That's partially due to timing, where you receive a lot of revenues by grants in advance, and those grants are yet to be spent. So with an increase in your cash and investments, you also have an increase in your unearned grant revenues, which is a liability. Otherwise, the other part of the increase is just from having a positive operating cash flows during the year. Moving on to liabilities and deferred inflows of resources, you notice here that you do have an increase in other liabilities, and that's primarily the unearned revenues. So you had an increase in your unearned revenues from grants. The other increases you'll notice is a slight increase in your net pension liability this year. And this is just because CalPERS as a whole in their cost sharing plan had an increase in their overall net pension liability just based on having poorer than expected investment returns. Moving on to net position, This is just a slide that covers your net position, which is your assets minus your liabilities in a simplistic way. This is categorized into three items, which is your net investment in capital assets, which is just your equity that's held up in capital assets. You have restricted net position, which is the monies that are restricted for specific purposes. And then you have your unrestricted funds, which are what are discretionary to be used as the board elects. You'll notice that you do have not many changes here. I think overall, everything's quite stable. Moving on to slide 13 here. This is referred to as an expenditure coverage. What we're doing here is just looking at the unrestricted fund balance of the district over the past 3 years, and then comparing it to the annual expenditures over the past 3 years. The GFOA, the Government Finance Officers Association, recommend that you have about 2 to 4 months of fund balance available. So in the very unlikely situation that you have no revenues available, you'd be able to operate for at least 2 months. The district has been consistent. You have about 10 months of consistent annual fund balance available. This is probably also a bit conservative because a lot of your expenditures are probably being are coming from your restricted revenues. You probably have probably if you eliminate those expenditures from the restricted fund balance, then you probably even have more fund balance available. Anyway, Henry has always good news to report that. This is a slide covering your pension liability and its relationship to the discount rate. The discount rate is a very significant assumption that goes into measuring the district's net pension liability. So with that, there is a required disclosure in your footnotes that there's a what-if scenario: had discount rate been 1% lower or 1% higher, what would be the net pension liability in that scenario? And you can see here that your pension liability could have been 16 million or 7 million. Not that one number is more accurate than the other, but just to give you an idea of a range when you're planning, especially if you're making decisions of trying to pay off or make additional payments, what that number would be. And probably your actuary may be able to actually help you more in getting a reasonable number there. But at least for disclosure purposes, this is all sufficient. Moving on to your OPEB liability, this is similar to the previous slide where we're just doing a 1% kind of a scenario. What would be the measurement had the discount rate been 1% lower or higher? You can see it's not as drastic of a difference here because when you're talking about retiree health premiums, that's a much smaller number than a retiree's pension. It will be paid out annually, but you can see here that you could have had a liability of 500,000 to about 170,000. So moving on to some required communications, and there's not much to report in this section, so I'll try to maybe just summarize in brief and just highlight the main points. This is a slide just covering our responsibilities as the auditors and management's responsibilities. It becomes a bit blurry and often confusing to a lot of people when we assist with preparing the financial statements, because overall, at the end of the day, the full report comes out of our office. So it's often misconstrued that the entire report is the auditor's report and it's the auditor's responsibility for the whole document. However, financial statements, the MD&A, all the components are actually management's responsibility. Our responsibility as the auditors is just to opine on those financial statements. With that comes a requirement for us to evaluate internal controls over financial reporting, doing some testing of compliance that have direct and material impact on those financial statements and communicating the results of the audit. Management are responsible for those financial statements, putting in place internal controls over financial reporting, complying with those laws and regulations, and also informing us if there was any issues that we need to be aware of for the audit, such as if there were instances of fraud or any kind of communications from regulators and such. And also if we have audit findings to take corrective action. Our responsibilities also include independence. So what that means is independence is something, as the auditors, is the most sacred element of our responsibilities, where if we fail in this, our audit report becomes quite meaningless, because it becomes the whole reason why you're going getting someone else to do your audit is to get an opinion that's free of bias, so to speak. So we follow rules that are set by the AICPA and the state board. Those rules would include not acting as management. So we don't prepare the records. We don't make management decisions as to what we're giving financial advice and those types of things. Other than assisting with the preparation of the financial statements, which is permitted with certain safeguards, no other types of activities were performed that may impair our independence. We had no issues with timing of the audit. We had one new accounting pronouncement that was implemented during the year. This had no impact on the financial statements. It deals with accounting changes and errors. So there were none of those this year. So that didn't really have an impact. In terms of estimates, so we did cover pension and OPEB are significant estimates. The other significant estimate in your financial statements is capital assets. And otherwise, we had no difficulties in performing the audit, no material weaknesses or any issues regarding adjustments that we proposed during the audit. Moving on to the new accounting standards that will be implemented. So there are a few new accounting pronouncements that will be coming up next year and following year. I think we're expecting a couple more that are in the exposure draft stages, where GASB is just waiting for feedback before they actually make them official. But currently, the district will have to address compensated absences next year. Compensated absences is something that's required a bit of an update, just because of nuances in what types of leave are being offered by governments these days. And then also just to clarify how those different types of leave need to be reported, just because there's been a lot of inconsistency in how different governments have addressed things. So I think for the most part, you shouldn't have a major impact on the number. You might just see it go up slightly next year, just because we're accounting for a few other things that would be included in the liability. And then statement 102, which is certain risk disclosures. This is a additional disclosure requirement that's needed now when you have a situation where an event has occurred that has significant implications on the financial status or potential future financial status of the government. So for example, if there was a city that had majority of its sales tax coming from one company in that city, and it was the city received notification that this company will be moving in the next few years, and it's going to have a significant impact on those revenues, that would be a required disclosure that would be needed, even though nothing has happened. Nothing has happened immediately, or nothing will happen in the near future. It is known that the sales tax that's currently being reported in the financial statements may no longer be there in the future. And also what would be required is the disclosure of what types of actions the government is taking to address that, that risk. It's a bit of an interesting type of disclosure, because there's not a lot of guidance at the moment as to what's considered to be significant or not. So that's something that hopefully we'll get more information from GASB as we are implementing that test. I'm sure there are many things that the district has to kind of address every year in terms of types of fees, you know, significant pays and so forth. And then 2026, again, nothing significant there that should impact your financial statements. There is some additional disclosure information for capital assets, but otherwise nothing significant. And that's all I have. Again, hopefully you were able to hear me throughout. I apologize. I had, for some reason, someone decided to, I guess, decide to do some landscaping right at lunchtime. But I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any from the board.
Thank you, Mitesh. We'll turn and see if there's any questions. I see Mayor Carbone.
Yes, thank you. So I noticed that there's a new required supplementary information regarding OPEB. Is that new for 2024? Page 103, just under the letter to the board from the auditors, it would be under page 103. Required supplementary information, and that's regarding the OPEB schedules. I think it's to help paint a picture a little bit better for the financial.
That was on page
103 in the agenda.
Oh, 103 agenda. Okay.
Page three. Under item seven.
I've got two different numbers.
Oh, sorry. Okay, got it. Page three. Right. Okay, got you. So on page three, so required supplementary information is information that's it's unaudited, but it's required disclosures that provide additional information about the numbers to put them into historical context, so to speak. So on pages, I have the financial statements open, so I'm looking at the financial statement page, but if you go to pages 48 through 47 of the actual financial statements report, that those are the OPEB required supplementary information disclosures, and it's essentially just information about the OPEB liability, the changes in the OPEB liability over the past, it's supposed to be the past 10 years, but this accounting pronouncement has only been in effect for, I believe, 7 years. So until we have 10 years of information, it will just kind of grow by 1 year every year, but that's the required supplementary information schedules that paragraph is referring to.
Thank you.
Any other members of the committee? Supervisor Adams.
Yes, thanks very much for the presentation. And I'm afraid I wasn't tracking, and I wanted to see if you could go back regarding the federal requirement, if I'm not mistaken, or state requirement of 2 months of cash reserves or operating expenses. And you said that, in fact, we have about 10 months in reserves?
Yes. You probably have, and this is only looking at, I'm just moving to that slide really quick.
My question actually was going then to how much of the 10 months did you indicate was in actual restricted funds, and how many months then are actually available for general management expenses, et cetera?
Okay, gotcha. And I apologize, I probably should have clarified, but this is only looking at your unrestricted fund balance. So this is excluding your restricted funds. Mm-hmm. So what I meant is that if you include I think the confusing part, which I'm trying to think of how to maybe show it better in the future, is that the annual expenditures that are the 10.8 million here, these annual expenditures include the expenditures that were charged to your restricted funds as well. So in reality, if we only wanted to look at your expenditures that were relating to the unrestricted revenues, you'd probably have, I don't have the number of the, I need to look closer, it might not even be that easily available, but what I was trying to say that you probably have a lot more than 10 months, if we were to include the restricted restricted fund balance, which I believe you have. I'm just trying to go back to, I guess I can see it on the previous slide. So you have about 16 million of restricted fund balance at the end of the year. And then if we add to that the 9 million, so you have a lot more than 10 months if we were to include them, like more than double. You have enough to cover you for a couple of years.
So is it common to carry that much and not have it being going out to programs or whatever?
I think it's, I think it is somewhat usual. I think for the most part, 2 to 4 months seems a bit low. I mean, there are a couple of reserves included in there. So you do have your reserves for pension, and you have also your reserves for uncertainty. So it's not necessarily unusual. Although it's the good thing is that it's consistent for the past 3 years. I think if we were seeing that it was growing significantly each year, then probably that would be of a concern. I mean, I guess it's less of a concern than if it was dropping every
year. It's a good concern to have. I mean, we're in a great position. And I certainly wouldn't want to change anything or rock the boat, but I was just kind of curious with other entities similar to ours, if they have as robust a reserve as we.
I would say from the, because it's a combination of different types of governments that we work with, I would say those that are in a good financial position, that the 10 months is what we would normally see. I think the clients that are, we do, I think we had one client, one town that just had a very large, like 24 months or something very significant, which was a wealthier area of the state. And I think their residents were, had a kind of concern about whether that reserve is too high, where they were concerned about programs, but I guess it's also one of those types of cities or towns where it's like, well, where I don't know what programs are needed or for it, but yeah, I would say it's consistent with our clients that are in a good, in a healthy financial position.
Okay, thank you very much for the explanation.
Name the town, Mitesh. We want to know where this unicorn is and raid their funds. Just kidding. All right. Anybody else on the dais? All right. Here, none. Let's see. Supervisor Kosmicki, any comments or questions?
No, thank you.
All right. Let's take this out to the public. See if anybody has questions or comments. We invite you to use the raise hand function, *9 via landline, in order to be recognized.
No one online.
See no one online, nobody in room. We'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back. At this point, we're looking for a motion that both receives the draft financial statements and recommends acceptance by the full board of directors. Is there a motion? Got a motion from Labar. Is there a second? I think the second from Adams. With that, we'll turn to Siri for a roll call vote.
All right. Director Carbone.
Aye.
Chair Lopez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Kosmicki.
Aye.
Chair Labar. I mean, excuse me, Director Labar. I promoted you. And Director Adams.
Aye.
Pass unanimously.
All right. Motion carries. With that, since it's a consensus for adjournment, we are adjourned, and we will come back for the full board meeting at 1:30. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Mitesh. We'll see you then.